Warning, the following true story contains adult themes and language, and can be graphic at times. Probably best to listen after the young ones have gone to sleep. Welcome to Chinatown, an original story by Benjamin Pollock. Copyright Benvention Films, Inc. Chapter 1. Hell.
Jeff Porter shivered as he ran down the cobblestone road, his bare feet slapping against the cold, damp stones. The fog hung low, clinging to the ground like a living thing, swirling in and out of view as if it had a mind of its own. He wasn't sure where he was, but he had the unsettling feeling he wasn't meant to be there. The silence pressed in on him, broken only by the distant whisper of voices. Foreign words drifted on the air, soft, indistinct, impossible to place. The sound filled him with a cold dread, the kind that crawled into your bones and sat there, gnawing. The cobblestone street stretched out in front of him, endless and dim, illuminated only by weak, flickering neon signs in Chinese. Their glow barely pierced the haze, giving off just enough light to suggest a destination that felt further away with every step. He glanced back, hoping to see something familiar, but there was only more fog, closing in, trapping him in this strange place. His breath quickened, his chest tightening as the feeling of being watched crept over him. What the hell is this place? The voices became clearer now, though he still couldn't understand them. They seemed to be calling him, pulling him deeper into the fog. His skin prickled with fear, his every instinct screaming at him to turn back, but he didn't. There was no turning back. Up ahead, the fog parted just enough for him to see the outline of a horse-drawn rickshaw. A man, pale and gaunt, pulled the animal with a slow, deliberate pace. The man's skin seemed almost translucent, his face set in a mask of indifference. Jeff's heart thudded in his chest. Here was someone, a person, a way to make sense of this. He staggered forward, his voice catching in his throat before finally spilling out. "Hey, hey you, where am I?" The man didn't stop. He didn't even look at Jeff, just trudged on, as if Jeff wasn't there at all. He was real, wasn't he? It wasn't a dream. He could feel the cold, feel the weight of his own body. He was here, wherever here was. Jeff blocked the man's path, halting him. "Dude, this is nuts. I'm lost. I have no idea where I am." The man waved his arms in anger for Jeff to get out of the way. His language was foreign, but his meaning was clear. The rickshaw moved through the mist, and as it passed, Jeff's eyes locked on the figure inside. Cloaked in a dark hood, the passenger sat eerily still, unmoving, like a statue. The sight of him sent a fresh wave of terror through Jeff's gut. He sensed something deeply wrong about the figure, as if it didn't belong in this world. His throat tightened. He stepped forward, closer now, his voice trembling. "Please, tell me where I am." The hooded figure didn't respond. It was as if Jeff's words couldn't penetrate the veil of fog that surrounded them both. Desperation took hold, and before he could stop himself, he reached out, his hand gripping the passenger's arm. The fabric of the cloak was cold and damp, but something moved beneath it, something that sent a shock of terror up his spine. The figure's hand shot out, skeletal fingers wrapping around Jeff's wrist with unnatural strength. His heart lurched, fear pounding in his ears. Inch by inch, the hooded figure's head began to turn. A blinding light pushed his face back, his eyes unable to see. His breath caught in his throat as the rickshaw jerked forward, the skeletal hand releasing him as quickly as it had grabbed him. Jeff stood frozen, his entire body shaking, watching the rickshaw disappear into the mist. As the fog closed in around him again, Jeff could still see it, those long, pale fingers clutching something. Dog tags. They dangled from the skeletal hand, the cold metal catching the dim light for just a second before they vanished into the fog. Was he dead? Was this hell? The street stretched out in front of him, still leading nowhere, and for the first time, Jeff felt utterly trapped. There was no escape from this place, no waking up, no running away. The sound of footsteps behind him broke the stillness, and he spun around. Two figures stood in the fog, their faces obscured.
"Jesus, there he is.
It is. It's him.
One of them raised something. A gun. Jeff's breath caught in his throat, and before he could react, the crack of gunfire split the air.
Tie him to that wagon wheel.
No. No, they won't. Nobody's gonna tie me to no wagon wheel. No, sir.
Then you'll die without a wheel.
Awake. Jeff jerked upright in bed, drenched in sweat, his heart hammering in his chest. His breath came in shallow, ragged gasps as he looked around, disoriented. A light from the television flickered across the room, John Wayne blasting away at an unseen enemy on the screen. A dream. It was just a dream. It was still 1987, and this was still Brooklyn, New York. He wiped a trembling hand across his face, trying to shake the lingering terror. Beside him, Rachel stirred, her raven hair spilling across the pillow. She sat up slowly, her eyes clouded with sleep. But even in the dim light, the curve of her body under the sheets drew his eyes. She wasn't just beautiful, she was electric. Rachel's lips parted as she glanced at the clock on the nightstand, her fingers drifting across Jeff's chest like she couldn't help herself. She leaned closer, her breath warm against his neck.
You're sweating,
she murmured, her voice low. But something in her tone flickered, an unspoken invitation. She pressed a kiss to his cheek, then another, this time near his ear, her lips teasing the edge of his jawline. The warmth of her touch, the softness of her skin against his, made Jeff forget the dream for a moment. His body responded before his mind could catch up, and he pulled her closer, his hands moving to her waist. There was a hunger between them, the kind that felt dangerous.
I've got you,
Rachel whispered, her lips brushing against his neck, trailing down toward his collarbone. Jeff's breath quickened, his pulse racing with more than just a leftover fear of his nightmare. His hand slipped under the sheet, feeling the heat of her skin, the way she responded to him. He was drowning in her smell, her warmth. There was no room left for doubt or guilt. For a moment, it was as if nothing else existed, just her body pressed against his. Just the rise and fall of her breath, the way she moved beneath him. But then Rachel's eyes flicked to the clock again, and her mood shifted.
We almost overslept,
she said, the seduction in her voice faltering as urgency slipped in.
You need to go.
Jeff hesitated, still caught in the haze of lust, still wanting her. He leaned in, kissing her shoulder, then her neck. We've got time. But Rachel pushed him back, her eyes flicking toward the door as if expecting it to burst open.
No, we don't. He'll be home soon.
The cold slap of reality hit him. Her husband. Jeff sat up quickly, the dream suddenly rushing back to him, mixing with the guilt that now twisted his gut. He started dressing hurriedly, avoiding Rachel's eyes, but the tension between them lingered, thick and raw.
You really wore me out tonight,
Rachel said softly, watching him as he tugged on his clothes. She had hoped to break the tension. Her voice held a teasing edge, but Jeff could hear the restraint behind it. She was pulling back, retreating into her careful control. Jeff looked at her then, really looked at her, the way she had wanted him just minutes ago, the heat between them. It wasn't just lust. There was something deeper for him, something that tugged at him in ways he hadn't admitted to himself yet. But he wouldn't say it, not now, not here. He turned to the TV as he pulled on his shirt, desperate for a distraction. The news had come on, and a crowd of reporters surrounded an older man with a white beard. Dr. Mellner. The camera zoomed in as the reporters fired questions at him, but Jeff only half listened, still reeling from the dream and the moment that had just passed between him and Rachel.
Are you really a psychic?
Something about Dr. Mellner's expression caught his attention. The way the man's eyes flicked nervously to the camera.
Congratulations on finding the Stevenson girl,
one of the reporters said.
This makes the fourth missing girl you found for the police in the last few years. What do you say to the people who still doubt you?
Dr. Mellner shifted uncomfortably, his hands trembling slightly as he spoke.
Sometimes I get these images, all jumbled up in my head, but it's not always what it seems.
Jeff's pulse quickened as Dr. Mellner's gaze seemed to fix on him through the screen. Something cold settled in his gut, the remnants of the dream pulling at the edges of his mind. Something or someone had just caught Dr. Mellner's attention. And whatever it was enough to send a visceral chill through Jeff's already tingling spine.
Chapter 2, 9 to 5.
fucking work. Harper and Johnston law offices sat modestly amidst the hustle of downtown. Outside, the streets bustled with life. But inside Jeff Porter's office, things felt more muted. His cluttered desk, strewn with papers and law books, faced a dirty window that offered a view of nothing more than another aging building. The kind of view that reminded Jeff why he didn't like this place, this job. Seated across from him was Mr. Cremont, a man worn thin by time and tragedy. He carefully flipped through wallet photos of his family, his gnarled hands trembling slightly with age.
"These are my granddaughters,"
Mr. Cremont said, his voice tinged with pride and sorrow as he pointed to the pictures of Beth and Linda. Jeff glanced at them briefly, offering a nod. "Beautiful family," Jeff replied absently. He'd seen these kinds of cases before, honest people on the edge, teetering towards something they wouldn't like if they saw it up close. Mr. Cremont shifted uncomfortably in his chair, his eyes softening as he spoke about his late wife, how she had passed away just before their first granddaughter was born. The grief in his words was palpable, but Jeff had heard it all before. He understood loss, even sympathized. But today was about business. Jeff leaned forward slightly. "Mr. Cremont, I'm afraid I can't be your lawyer." The older man blinked in surprise, his confusion clear as he stammered,
"You do take accident cases, don't you?"
Jeff exhaled, choosing his words carefully. "Yes, but you're not the type to go after someone ruthlessly. This will get ugly, and you don't strike me as the kind of man who wants to go down that road." He gestured toward the photos. "Think about those grandkids. You want to leave them something, right? If you don't act, the store owner could spin this whole thing against you." The old man looked down at his hands, the weight of Jeff's words sinking in. He wasn't sure what to say, but he knew Jeff was right. The world had grown harsher, and if he didn't protect himself, he could lose everything. Jeff could see the doubt in the man's face, the internal struggle. It was time to seal the deal. "You need to hire someone who can fight this battle for you, someone who knows the game." Mr. Cremont hesitated, then slowly nodded.
"Well, then it's simple. I'll hire you."
Jeff smiled, but it didn't quite reach his eyes. He stood and handed Mr. Cremont a card for a doctor, advising him to get checked out, knowing full well that the visit would drum up more evidence for the case. "You're not alone in this anymore," Jeff said, shaking the old man's hand. "We'll make sure you're taken care of." Mr. Cremont's smile was thin but grateful as he left the office. Jeff's eyes followed him out the door, the moment of sincerity fading. Fucking work. Just then, Margaret Harper, the boss's daughter, appeared at the doorway.
"Hey, Jeff. Let me take you to lunch,"
she said with a cute smile, one that seemed put on like the ruby red lipstick she loved to wear. Her smile was disarmingly casual, but Jeff had worked with her long enough to know there was always something more lurking beneath that friendly facade. Margaret wasn't just attractive. There was a quiet confidence about her that made it hard for Jeff to focus. "You want to take me to lunch?" Jeff asked, the suspicion clear in his tone, though his eyes flicked, just for a second, to the curve of her hips as she leaned against the doorframe. She laughed lightly, brushing off the awkwardness.
"Just thought it'd be nice to get to know the guy working for my father."
Jeff wasn't buying it. Still, something about the way she moved, the way her hair caught the light, made it harder than usual to stay sharp. He hesitated, but eventually agreed. As they walked out onto the city streets, the normal sounds of traffic and distant chatter filled the air, but Jeff's mind was elsewhere. Margaret's presence was distracting. The way she walked with that subtle sway in her hips, the faint scent of her perfume carried by the breeze, it was messing with his head. "Focus, Jeff." He forced himself to stay grounded, but the pull was undeniable. They stopped at the crosswalk, waiting for the light to change.
"I had to take my car into the
Margaret
shop,
made
so
small talk,
alone.
Her voice casual, but Jeff could barely follow the words.
"But it turned out great."
He was too busy trying to keep his eyes from drifting to the way her lips curved when she smiled, the way her skin seemed to glow under the sun. But then, something shifted. His gaze locked onto something across the street. A horse-drawn rickshaw. The fog of attraction lifted, replaced by the icy grip of fear. The world around him blurred, the sound of traffic fading into the background. His heart started to race, the unsettling feeling creeping back into his gut. Dunkert's voice faded into the background, and Jeff couldn't tear his eyes away from the rickshaw. The same pale Chinese driver from his dream moved slowly, lifting the wooden planks with the same deliberate motions. Jeff's pulse pounded in his ears, his breath catching in his throat. Everything around him seemed to slow, like he was walking through molasses. He couldn't take his eyes off the rickshaw, his bottom lip trembling as the familiar cold crept over his skin. His arms wrapped around his chest, trying to hold in the warmth that was quickly slipping away. The air thickened. Jeff could see his icy breath, cold and damp, hanging in front of him. The rickshaw began to pull away, its wheels creaking like bones grinding together. As it moved, a hand slowly extended from the passenger compartment, black sleeve covering the arm, and below it, a fleshless skeleton hand, clutching dog tags. Jeff's eyes widened, terror spreading through him like wildfire. He stumbled forward, his movements slow and heavy, but before he could reach the rickshaw, a taxi screeched to a halt just inches away from him. The blast of a horn shook him from the trance.
Hey, you, genius! You want to get out of the way, Dad?
The driver yelled out the window, his face twisted with irritation.
Hey, come on, dude, let's go!
Jeff blinked, still dazed, his heart slamming against his chest. He looked back toward the street, but the rickshaw was gone, like it was never there. The fog, the hand, the driver, everything vanished. Margaret grabbed his arm, her grip tight with concern.
What the hell was that?
I don't know, he muttered, his voice barely audible, as if the words were slipping away with his breath. The taxi driver honked again, and Margaret shot him a scathing look.
We go or what? Hey, come on, I got somewhere to be.
Back off,
she snapped, pulling Jeff toward the curb. Her voice softened as she turned back to him.
You almost got yourself killed back there.
Jeff shook his head, trying to snap out of the haze. The street, the people, the city, all of it felt too real now, too heavy after the vision that had just gripped him. It wasn't a vision. It was real. Margaret led him away from the street, her hands still on his arm.
You need to eat something. Let's get some food in you.
Chapter 3. Food.
The cafe was a small, quiet place, tucked away from the city's constant hum. The smell of fresh bread and coffee cut through the din of traffic as they sat at a corner table. Sunlight filtered through the window, casting a soft glow over Margaret's face. Jeff poked at his food, barely tasting it. His mind still spun, stuck between the fog of the dream and the icy reality of what he had just seen. His hands shook slightly as he scooped another forkful of food into his mouth, hoping the act of eating would anchor him, push away the fear that clung to him like wet clothes. Margaret watched him closely, her brow furrowed in concern.
When was the last time you ate?
She asked, her voice cutting through the silence. I don't know. Yesterday, maybe, Jeff mumbled, avoiding her gaze.
You're going to end up in a hospital if you keep this up,
she said, her tone more serious now. She leaned forward, her fingers brushing the edge of his plate as if she was trying to pull his attention back to her.
You really don't look well.
Jeff shrugged, shoveling more food into his mouth, trying to keep the unease at bay. But as he sat there, his gaze drifted to Margaret's lips, the curve of her neck as she leaned closer. He was trying to focus on anything but the swirling chaos in his head, but Margaret's presence was becoming another kind of distraction. She always had that effect, calm and confident on the surface, but underneath, a sensuality that pulled at him. He cleared his throat, forcing the thoughts away. I just haven't been sleeping too well, he said, his voice low, almost an excuse. Margaret tilted her head, her eyes searching his face.
Something on your mind?
He hesitated, his gaze drifting again, this time to her eyes, the way they locked onto his as if she was seeing through him. He forced a smile, though it felt disconnected. You could say that, he replied, his tone shifting as he tried to regain control of the conversation. It's this woman I've been seeing. Margaret's interest piqued, her eyes flickering with curiosity.
Really? Seeing someone new?
Jeff swallowed, looking down at his plate as he considered how much to tell her. Rachel. He knew it was a bad idea to bring it up, but the words spilled out before he could stop them. She's married. Her husband works nights. It's complicated. Margaret's expression changed instantly, cooler, more reserved.
Married?
There was a slight pause, and Jeff felt the weight of her judgment even before she said another word.
I wouldn't have expected that from you.
He regretted mentioning it the moment it left his lips. I'm not asking for your approval. Margaret pressed her lips into a thin line, clearly not impressed. It was a mistake to tell her. She pulled back, her tone more clipped now. Jeff noticed. So what's with the lunch then? I can't imagine you wanted to ask me out socially. Margaret sighed, looking down at her hands for a moment, before lifting her gaze to meet his.
Fine, I'll cut to the chase.
She leaned forward slightly, lowering her voice.
We've been getting complaints from the other partners.
Jeff's stomach dropped, his fork pausing midair. Complaints? About what? Margaret glanced around the cafe, making sure no one was paying attention.
It's about how you handle things, the types of cases you take. We're not an ambulance-chasing firm, Jeff. My father wanted me to talk to you. Straighten things out.
Jeff clenched his jaw, his appetite vanishing. So that's what this is about. He sent his daughter to do the dirty work, huh? What a coward. Margaret opened her mouth to respond. But before she could say anything, Jeff froze. The world seemed to slow around him. His hand shot to his throat. Something's wrong. His breath caught. His fingers gripped his neck as his pulse quickened. He was choking. He coughed, but the food wouldn't budge. Panic surged through him. He lurched forward, his body convulsing as he tried to suck in air, but nothing came. His vision started to blur, dark spots dancing at the edge of his sight. Margaret stood up, her face draining of color.
Oh my God, Jeff.
Jeff couldn't answer. His hands flailed, gripping the edge of the table as his body thrashed. Plates and silverware clattered to the floor, his body heaving, desperate for air. The room spun, the sound of people gasping and murmuring growing distant. Then, something cold gripped him. A hand, fleshless, cold, a skeletal hand wrapped around his throat, pulling at him, prying his mouth open. Jeff's vision narrowed to a pinprick. He was caught between the world of the living and something else, something darker. And then, the hand released him. The pressure vanished. Jeff gasped, air rushing back into his lungs like a lifeline. He lay on the floor, staring up at the concerned faces of the cafe patrons. Margaret knelt beside him, her hand on his shoulder, her face tight with fear. She was the one who had saved him.
Are you okay?
Without a word, he pushed Margaret away and scrambled to his feet, his legs unsteady beneath him. He bolted out of the cafe, leaving the crowd and Margaret's confused expression behind.
Chapter 4. Betrayal.
Later that night, Jeff sat in his dim office, the yellow and red flickers of a neon sign outside casting a rhythmic, mindless glow against the brick wall. The old lamp on his rickety desk barely illuminated the dingy room, leaving much of the space consumed by shadows. He had just finished rolling a joint, the smell of it blending with the scent of paper and ink. He lit it, drawing in a deep drag, letting the smoke fill his lungs before exhaling slowly. The clock ticked quietly. He checked his watch. It was time. Reaching for the phone, he dialed Rachel's number, knowing she'd be waiting. On the other side of the city, Rachel reclined on her bed, the soft glow of candles flickering around her as she sipped a glass of wine. She wore a seductive nightgown, anticipation playing across her lips. When the phone rang, she picked it up with a smile. "Hey, babe," Jeff said, his voice low and gravelly.
"Hi, stranger,"
she replied, her voice silky, teasing. "So you're alone, I take it." Rachel's tone dropped further, oozing with seduction.
"You guessed right."
Jeff smiled, his mind wandered, images of her playing in his head.
"So, what's on your mind?"
she asked, her fingers slowly tracing the curves of her body, feeling the heat of the moment. Jeff chuckled. He knew the game she was playing. "You know what's on my mind. It's what's always on my mind."
"Tell me about it,"
she whispered. He hesitated for a moment, feeling the game unravel before him. "I'd rather show you."
"No,"
she purred.
"I want you to tell me."
He smiled to himself. "I thought I might come over."
"Not here. I'm waiting at the train station. I'm alone, wearing a long black coat, black high heels. It was so hot, I couldn't stand it. I had to get out. I didn't have time to put anything else on.
Jeff leaned forward, intrigued, his heart picking up pace. The train is running late.
I've been waiting so long,
she breathed, her voice trembling with excitement. A smile tugged at Jeff's lips. I see you waiting. I know you're alone. Rachel arched her body at the thought.
You've been watching me?
Yes, he murmured. Watching you. Wanting you. The tension between them crackled through the line. Jeff's pulse raced. He could hear her breathing grow faster. Could imagine her there, in the dim light, alone.
I try to leave, but you take me.
Who the hell are you talking to?
Jeff froze. Her husband, Greg, was on the other line, just outside the bedroom door. The shadow of his massive frame loomed on the wall.
Oh my God, Greg?
Rachel gasped, her voice barely above a whisper.
I'm going to kill you.
And then, silence. Jeff sat frozen, his breath caught in his throat, waiting for something, anything, to break the stillness. Then, faintly, he heard Rachel's voice, a soft, desperate whisper.
Help me.
19T2. The customer you're trying to reach is not available. Please call back.
The line went dead. For a moment, Jeff stared at the phone, unsure of what to do. Chills raking down his spine. His hand hovered over the receiver as he contemplated dialing again. His fingers moved, calling the police. But halfway through, he stopped. He glanced at the smoldering joint, the smoke curling lazily in the air, and hung up. The station. Later, now close to midnight, Jeff stood on the platform of an elevated train station, waiting for the Silver Dragon to whisk him home. The silence was oppressive. Scattered papers rustled in the slight breeze, and old cans and trash littered the ground. The station felt deserted, abandoned. Jeff bent to pick up a crumpled newspaper, scanning the headlines in a vain attempt to focus on something other than the gnawing unease in his gut. But then, something caught his eye. A woman stood at the far end of the platform, her back to him. She wore a long black coat and black high heels, her raven hair spilling over her shoulders, a black hat obscuring her face. Jeff's blood ran cold. It was Rachel. She stood there, silent. Then she turned to face him. Her coat parted slightly, just enough for him to see that she was completely naked beneath it. Jeff's initial confusion gave way to a sly smile. It was just like their phone fantasy. Rachel? He called out, his voice filled with disbelief. She said nothing, only stood there, her pale skin shimmering under the faint station lights. Slowly, she lifted a hand to her stomach, touching the bare flesh. Jeff's smile faltered as he approached her, the unsettling feeling returning. I was going to call the police. But I knew you'd be okay, he murmured, trying to shake the strange sensation creeping up his spine. Rachel remained silent, her eyes locked on his. As he neared, he could hear the distant roar of a train approaching. He reached out, his fingers brushing the smooth fabric of her coat as he slid his hands around her waist. Her head fell back in a gesture of pleasure as his lips grazed her neck. As the train sped past them, its lights flickering across the platform, making everything look like stop motion, Jeff pulled back, his eyes meeting hers. And in that moment, he froze. It wasn't Rachel. It was a skull, a white, rotting skull draped in a black hood. The face of death stared back at him, its jaw hanging open, blood dripping from the gaping mouth. The skeletal figure grabbed him, its slender, bony hands digging into his shoulders. It struck him across the face again and again, each blow landing harder than the last. Jeff stood paralyzed, trapped in a nightmare, helpless against the onslaught. But as the train finally rushed by, the truth was revealed. Two thugs, rough and grim, were slapping him around, stealing his wallet and watch while Jeff lay helpless, trapped in his own hellish vision. Only seeing what his mind saw.
Chapter 5. Help.
Jeff staggered into the elevator of his apartment building, barely able to keep his balance. His body was battered, his clothes torn, blood trickling from the corner of his mouth. His head throbbed like it was about to explode, but somehow he pushed forward. The worn-out elevator door creaked as he stumbled out, collapsing into the dimly lit hallway. His vision blurred, every breath a struggle, when a figure appeared, a neighbor, rushing towards him.
Dear God, boy.
Dr. Melner, the elderly man with the gentle white beard, the psychic from the news broadcast, dropped his groceries and knelt beside Jeff.
What the devil happened to you?
He immediately began helping Jeff up, easing his weight as they made their way toward the apartment.
There, there, my boy. Slowly now.
Jeff's strength gave out. He fell back. Everything faded to black. Jeff stirred awake, the dull ache in his body reminding him of every hit he had taken. The room felt off at first, his own living room, yet unfamiliar in the haze of pain and exhaustion. His cheek burned beneath the patch covering his bruised face, and his ribs ached with each breath. A figure sat across from him, watching with quiet patience. Dr. Dale Melner, the psychic from the news.
You're awake,
Melner said, lowering the music on the radio.
That's a good start.
Jeff blinked, his mind sluggish, piecing together the fragments. The alley, the attack, the long, staggering walk home. He swallowed down the bitterness of needing help, especially from someone like this. You brought me in? His voice was hoarse.
I did. You collapsed in the hallway. Thought about calling an ambulance, but given the circumstances, I decided against it.
What circumstances?
The fact that I'm also a medical doctor, psychiatrist. I stitched you up myself. If you were worse off, I'd have sent you to the hospital.
He gestured toward the blanket draped over Jeff.
Looks like you're going to live.
Jeff exhaled, pushing himself up despite the pain. His eyes drifted toward something in Melner's hands, a framed photo. His father, standing stiff in his army uniform, dog tags around his neck, a solemn expression frozen in time. Melner studied it for a moment longer before setting it down beside the same dog tags now resting on the table.
Your father?
Jeff hesitated, his throat tightening. Killed in Vietnam. Melner nodded, his voice softer.
War takes a toll in more ways than one.
Jeff looked away. Didn't really know him.
That must have been difficult.
Look, I don't know you, and even if I did, I wouldn't get into this conversation with a psychic, doctor or not. A small, amused sigh escaped Melner.
Fair enough. Let's talk about something else then.
He studied Jeff for a beat longer, something shifting in his expression.
There is something dark, dark and powerful surrounding you.
What? Oh, God, here we go.
Mock me if you will, boy, but when I found you, I felt a darkness, a warning of some sort. It's not always clear what these images I see mean, but it's there nonetheless. I'm also getting a vibe that you might be psychic. It's like I can recognize one of my own. But I don't envy you, boy. It can be very confusing.
Jeff stiffened. That's really special. You know where the door is. Melner didn't argue. Instead, he reached into his jacket and pulled out a folded drawing, placing it gently on the table.
I don't always know what I'm looking at when I get these images,
he said.
They come in fragments and sometimes they're misleading, but this one was strong. I'm just down the hall if you want to chit-chat.
Without another word, he turned and exited the apartment, his footsteps light against the floor, the door clicking shut behind him. Jeff sat motionless, his pulse thudding in his ears as he stared at the folded paper. Every fiber of his being told him not to look, but his fingers moved anyway, trembling slightly as he unfolded it. His breath hitched. There it was, sketched in pencil. The Grim Reaper. A skeletal figure draped in shadow, clutching a machine gun in one bony hand and a set of dog tags in the other. Hours must have passed. Jeff had lost track of time. He had told Melner everything. Rachel, the affair, the phone call, the fear in her voice before the line went dead, and the station, how he had seen her there, standing exactly as she had described. But it wasn't Rachel. Her face had twisted into something else, a skull grinning, waiting. Melner listened carefully, nodding at times, jotting notes in his small pad. No judgment, no interruptions, just that quiet, unwavering patience.
You weren't attacked by the Grim Reaper,
Melner finally said.
You were mugged.
The words barely registered. Melner motioned toward Jeff's wrist.
Your watch is gone.
Jeff blinked, looking down, bare skin. A sickening dread crawled up his spine as he patted his pockets. Empty, his wallet gone, cold certainty settled in his gut. Melner leaned forward slightly, his voice gentle but unwavering.
There, you see, you'll call the police in the morning and report it. I have a feeling your ghost is out charging up your American Express as we speak.
Well, what about your drawing? How did you know I was seeing the Grim Reaper?
Images come in. Sometimes they make sense, sometimes they don't. I don't always get it right, but in this case, your stress created that image and I picked it up. If I may, you are not being stalked by the Grim Reaper. The visions you are having, the dream, the crosswalk, the cafe, it's all in your head, created by you as a tool to mask your guilt. At first blush, I thought you might be psychic yourself, getting messages from something beyond, but after getting to know you and hearing your story, well, the psychiatrist in me tells me otherwise. Your denial of your own guilt has created the Grim Reaper, and that's the image I picked up.
Jeff swallowed hard, his throat tightening. What are you saying?
That guilt has shaped your life,
Milner said.
Your father's death, it wasn't just loss, it was abandonment. You chase things you can't have, not because you want them, but because you need to prove to yourself that you're worth something.
Jeff's stomach twisted.
The girl, for example. Married, untouchable in a way. By sleeping with a married woman, you deny yourself the chance of ever having a real relationship and real love because you don't think you deserve it. When you hung up and did nothing, the guilt and fear came rushing in. You love her, but you don't think you're worthy of it.
Jeff felt exposed, raw. He ran a hand through his hair, his pulse pounding. So what do I do? Melner rested a hand on his shoulder.
If you love her, be a man and go get her. And from what you told me, she needs you. I suspect if you do the right thing, your monster will lose its power and fade away. After all, there is no such thing as the Grim Reaper.
As quietly as he had arrived, he was gone. Jeff sat frozen for a long moment, the weight of the drawing pressing into him like an accusation. His hands trembled as he reached for the phone.
The customer you're trying to reach is not available. Please call back.
Shit.
Chapter 6. Welcome to Chinatown.
Jeff sprinted through the dimly lit streets, his breath heavy and uneven, fear driving him forward. Rachel's house loomed ahead, a row home like so many others, but something was wrong. The front door was wide open, light spilling out into the night, casting an eerie glow on the steps. Jeff came to a halt, dread washing over him in waves as he stared at the open door. His heart raced. He approached cautiously, each step feeling like a mistake. The house was silent, too silent. His mind screamed at him to turn back, to leave, but his body moved on its own, compelled by the horrifying certainty that something terrible had happened. He stepped into the foyer, his breath shallow as he surveyed the scene. The house was a wreck. In the living room, furniture lay overturned, glasses shattered, books and lamps strewn across the floor. The sight stopped him in his tracks, his eyes widening in alarm. His pulse thundered in his ears. He bolted out of the living room and up the stairs, panic surging through his veins. Every inch of the upstairs hallway mirrored the chaos below. Articles of clothing, picture frames, and debris scattered everywhere. His fear intensified as he neared the bedroom, his gut twisting in knots. He was almost afraid to see what lay ahead. Jeff paused outside the bedroom door, his hand trembling as he reached for the handle. Inside, candles still flickered, knocked over but miraculously still lit, their glow casting shadows across the disheveled bed. The beeping of Rachel's smashed phone on the floor was the only sound, its eerie pulse filling the silence. His eyes shifted to the open bathroom door, dread weighing him down. Every instinct screamed at him to stop, to turn and run, but his body moved on its own. Jeff stepped toward the bathroom, his heart pounding in his chest. The moment stretched out, unbearably tense, until finally he crossed the threshold. Rachel was there, draped over the bathtub, her throat slashed open, her eyes wide and bulging in a grotesque expression of terror. Blood was everywhere, painting the walls and floor in thick, horrifying streaks. The gruesome sight slammed into Jeff like a freight train, knocking the breath from his lungs. But as the shock coursed through him, something deeper, something far more painful, began to take root. He loved her. The realization hit him like a slow, cruel knife twisting in his chest. He loved her. He had always loved her, even in those fleeting, stolen moments when they weren't supposed to feel anything at all. But now, it was too late. Rachel was gone. The woman he wanted to save, to hold close, was beyond his reach, her body cold and lifeless, a blood-soaked shell. There was nothing left but the carnage of the life they could have had together, the words they never said, the touches they never shared. His knees buckled, his breath caught in his throat, a strangled gasp escaping his lips as the sheer horror of it all overwhelmed him. He staggered back, his vision swimming, the weight of the loss crashing down on him in suffocating waves. His mind couldn't process it, couldn't make sense of this nightmare. He had been too late. He turned and fled, stumbling out of the bathroom as if running could somehow undo the scene burned into his mind. His legs barely carried him as he crashed down the stairs, his heart pounding in his chest, the air feeling thin and bitter. His body moved on instinct, fueled by terror and grief, until he finally spilled out onto the street. Outside, he collapsed against a parked car, his body convulsing, tears spilling down his face. Jesus Christ. The words fell from his lips in broken fragments, his voice weak, consumed by guilt. He couldn't save her. He couldn't fix this. He had failed her in every possible way, and the weight of that failure crushed him. And then, the distant wail of police sirens cut through the night, snapping him back to the grim reality. Jeff's head jerked up, his pulse racing with panic. He looked back at the house, then to the sidewalk, where he saw his own bloody footprints leading out of the doorway. A trail of guilt, guilt that now had him firmly in its grip. "Oh God," he muttered, his mind shattering under the pressure. He felt like he was coming apart at the seams, his thoughts fractured and chaotic. He couldn't stay. He had to get away. With one last desperate look at the house, something inside him broke. He threw off his bloody shoes, and he ran. Jeff ran aimlessly through the cold, dark streets, his chest heaving, his mind fractured. A fog had rolled in, almost on cue. He kept running, around corners, through dark streets, until finally he found himself in a part of the city that made his heart stutter. Chinatown. The neon signs glowed faintly through the thick mist, the steam rising from the sewers filling the air with a ghostly haze. The cobblestone streets were slick beneath his feet, just as they had been in the dream. The night air stung his lungs as he sprinted blindly, just as he had in the dream, the nightmare that had felt like an omen. Up ahead, the fog parted just enough for him to see the outline of a horse-drawn rickshaw. A man, pale and gaunt, pulled the animal with a slow, deliberate pace. The man waved his arms in anger for Jeff to get out of the way. Jeff darted to the side, clipping a metal grate, ripping his shirt down his back. Jeff staggered, his knees buckling from exhaustion. He bent over, gasping for breath, the world spinning around him. His body shook uncontrollably as he collapsed to his knees in the middle of the street. It was all happening. The dream had warned him. He barely registered the sound of laughter behind him, but it pierced through his fog of despair. Jeff looked up to see two figures, Greg, Rachel's husband, and Margaret, from the office, standing a few feet away.
Oh my God. Greg, it's fucking him.
Unbelievable.
Greg's face twisted in disbelief as he pulled out a large gun from under his coat.
Motherfucker.
The sight of the gun sent a surge of terror through Jeff's veins, and without thinking, he turned and ran. The echo of his footsteps bouncing off the alley walls. His legs burned, his lungs screamed for air, but the fear was greater. He had to escape. He couldn't let it end like this. He stumbled into an alley, collapsing against a dumpster, his body trembling uncontrollably. He was trapped, nowhere to run, nowhere to hide. And then they were there, standing over him, watching him with cold, gloating smiles. Greg raised the gun, pointing it at Jeff's head with calm precision, as if this were merely the end of some sick game. Margaret's voice dripped with bitter satisfaction.
Small world, Jeff. Who would have thought you were sleeping with my lover's wife?
Jeff's mind scrambled for understanding, confusion overtaking his fear for a moment. He killed her. Margaret's smile widened, cruel and mocking.
No, no, Jeff. You killed her. That's the story. You gave me the idea. I didn't know you were sleeping with Greg's wife until you told me yourself.
His memory flooded back to that lunch. Margaret prodding him, making him spill his secrets.
Really? Seeing someone new?
She's married. Her husband works nights. It's complicated. He had played right into her hands.
I checked your office phone records.
Margaret continued, her voice like poison.
And guess what? Greg's home number showed up. All the calls from your office, right when he was working nights.
Jeff's heart pounded in his chest, but his mind was racing. You can't get away with murder, he said, his voice weak, desperate.
Of course we will. And you made it so easy for us,
Margaret said with a cold laugh.
You were sleeping with Greg's wife. When she refused to leave him, you killed her. Greg, the poor, heartbroken husband, stumbled into the scene and chased down his wife's killer. No jury in the world would convict him. Too bad it's you, Jeff. You would have been perfect for a case like this.
Greg stepped forward, lifting his arm, and that's when Jeff saw it. The horror of it all became clear as if a lightning bolt made contact with his head. The tattoo on Greg's forearm, the Grim Reaper. Dog tags in one hand, a machine gun in the other, perched in a rickshaw, just like Dr. Melner's drawing, just like the vision that had haunted him. Greg's voice was low and menacing.
Say hello to the Grim Reaper, asshole.
Sometimes I get these images all jumbled up in my head, but it's not always what it seems.